This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America, here to talk to you this week about the current state of the domestic and global economies, how the markets are performing in an environment where we've seen an updraft in inflation, and some hints that the Federal Reserve may dial back its easy money policies. Does that mean that the reflation trade is over? Does it mean that inflation is accelerating? What exactly does it mean for your investment dollars? Joining me now to discuss that is Marina Severnovsky, Investment Director, a U.S. QEP product manager, who's here to talk about all those questions and more today. Marina, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Ron. Thank you. Good morning.
Before I get to reflation and that reflation trade, let me ask you about the inflation outlook, because we've gotten so much data over the last 4 months. And for the last 4 months, we've seen consumer prices, particularly in the U.S., run at a better than 5% clip headline. And the core rate may have moderated recently down to about 4.1%. But we're even seeing, you know, above 8% inflation rates in places like China. How critical is this to your outlook, both on the domestic and global economies, but also to the trades that you find most attractive?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the inflation outlook, honestly, has been one of the biggest talking points this year. But we think it's probably less important in terms of equity allocation than it is in sort of fueling short-term volatility via overreaction to Fed statements. I think notwithstanding some of the data you cited, I don't think anyone's expecting a return to the 1970s. And equities don't mind periods of moderate inflation. I think equities don't like deflation. You know, we see the experience of Japan or very high inflation. But there's little evidence to suggest that inflation lower than, let's say, you know, 4% on a prolonged basis is particularly concerning. And we've started to see, I think, glass print in the U.S., for example, you know, coming in kind of more within expectations, although, of course, expectations have also adjusted. And the bond market does seem to agree, sort of given the more recent rate trend. So I think, you know, from our perspective, in terms of the kind of areas that we're looking at, the kind of stocks that we're looking at, there isn't necessarily a headwind from any kind of particular economic scenario, including, you know, somewhat elevated inflation, again, as long as it doesn't become sort of very high and entrenched over time.
So you're in the same camp as the Federal Reserve with respect to inflation being, as they like to say, transitory?
I would say at this point, yes, though, you know, obviously, like everyone else, we're looking closely at things so like wage data, where things can become, you know, more entrenched.
Now, we've seen a big crack in the commodities market of late, you know, and everyone was screaming about lumber earlier in the year. And it's gone from $1,670 per thousand board feet to under $500 in just a couple of months. And we've seen some breaks, not quite as dramatic in copper and in certain agricultural commodities, even in some industrial metals. Is that one of the reasons why you're not as concerned maybe as some others might be?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, part of it has been that these have been pockets, you know, commodity related, you know, kind of shipping, you know, prices, you know, sort of in pockets that seem to us to be both kind of, you know, push and pull, you know, type inflationary sort of trend, but more related to sort of the reopening of the economies, you know, globally, not necessarily something that, you know, becomes a long-term sort of trend.
Okay, so does that affect then the reflation trade? If inflation becomes less and less of a problem over time, does reflation hold with respect to an investment thesis? And does it also suggest that there's more runway in that regard?
Yeah, sure. And I say this in the context of sort of, you know, we are a value investor team, you know, in terms of kind of how we look at things. And so what we would say is that the initial reflation trade was more about sort of cyclical slash COVID losers bouncing back. And while they're still well behind their pre-pandemic levels, both on a performance and valuation sense, the increasing concerns, we think about the Delta variant and the degree of ongoing support from policymakers, we already talked a little bit about policy, does suggest to us that this initial part of the trade has run its course. And sort of speaking of commodities, the recent correction in energy stocks, which is, you know, still the best performing sector year to date, but I think it's a good way of gauging the market's mindset on this. However, we think that by far the more important point for us is that value is not just about cyclical stocks. We've recently seen other very affordable areas like healthcare performing well. And to us, that ticks both the value and the quality boxes. So if we're looking ahead, we actually think the best prospects are in these sort of quality at a reasonable price stocks rather than deep value. And on that basis, we still have a very long way to travel for valuations to normalize. But, you know, it's also far more nuanced now than just calling out a particular cyclical or economically sensitive sector or region. It should be a good time for active management, you know, for stock selection. But this more volatile backdrop, everything we've been citing, does pose a risk, I think, for those who have grown lazy by simply chasing winners.
So let me ask you then about that overall view on the trades that we've actually liked, whether it was growth to value, large to small, domestic or international. Are these trades no longer monolithic in the sense that we've seen performance kind of even out among these various groups? And as you suggested, it may require more selectivity and more active management, no matter which category you're in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it exactly right. I think, you know, from our perspective, outside of like a return to the lockdowns of 2020 because of the rise of a vaccine-resistant variant, you know, we don't think that, again, is a particular economic scenario that's sort of required for the stocks that we look at, which is sort of very affordable, high-quality stocks to perform well. And if anything, all this uncertainty about the economic outlook, inflation included, actually sort of reinforces their attractiveness. These are stocks that are more capable of outperforming across a range of different market environments. They have sort of better growth prospects, better fundamentals, they're more financially sound. But I think then you're talking about kind of bottom up. You're looking at a certain kind of company and its fundamentals, and I think less about sort of those, you know, broad categories, right? You know, is it large versus small? Is it, you know, sort of international versus U.S.? There's a lot of opportunity outside the U.S. that we're seeing. I think from a market cap perspective, you know, the large versus small, it's far less about small versus large cap. And I think it's much more about the kind of top 20 popular stocks versus the rest. Mm-hmm. I think market breadth has generally improved this year, despite a revival in the popular stocks in the U.S. in recent months. But even there, there's greater dispersion among the big names. So there's evidence that the market's becoming more discerning. Ex-US, as we know, some of the biggest stocks are in China, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And those have, you know, cracked to some degree. So, you know, what that means is the average stock, as we know, globally has been really left behind in recent years. Right. And so if the kind of big stocks become less of a focus at a high level, there are far more opportunities to exploit kind of across the entire market, you know, especially if you believe that all the good news is already priced for many of those index heavyweights. So I think we are really quite focused right now on kind of that bottom up level and really stock selection.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Marina, you brought up a host of issues that I'd like to question you about. But first, let me get to China since you mentioned it, and obviously figures so prominently in many investment decisions on a global basis. When you look at China, given that it's underperformed the rest of the world, given the regulatory risk that we've seen there and other considerations around China, how do you view it in the context either of a developed or an emerging market?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I would say, obviously, there's some hot spots for investors at the moment. So the sort of, you know, the Chinese K-12 education names, right, that's been kind of all over the news. I think there's probably concerns also about the kind of big internet and gaming names. We'll talk about that in a moment in terms of maybe additional regulation there. I would say also, you know, stocks that are listed in the U.S., investors should probably be quite selective about those going forward. You know, there are some stocks that are dual listed in both Hong Kong and the U.S., and I think it might make sense to sort of prioritize the Hong Kong lines. There could be, we think, more liquidity there going forward. I think more broadly, you know, EM was already looking cheap, and the depth of the market, I think, means that the significant correction we've recently seen in some of the largest Chinese stocks has only reinforced that. Some of these Chinese stocks are actually now on the cusp of being considered value. Some kind of a more interest to us. But to be frank, no one knows the extent to which the higher risk premiums due to ongoing regulatory uncertainty have already been reflected. So while the Chinese regulators have hinted that China is not cracking down on any other industry apart from education, we know for a fact that regulation has lagged innovation in China. that the government is focused on reducing inequality and promoting common prosperity. So things like the gig economy, which exacerbate inequality, are likely to remain in the crosshairs. So it seems to us that it would be better to look for opportunities elsewhere in EM rather than taking a punt on Chinese policy decisions. As we mentioned, China's a very big component. It's 38% of the EM index, but there's still a lot to invest in outside of those largest stocks. So we don't broadly see kind of a taper tantrum-like headwinds for EM overall. The U.S. dollar strength, we think, is constrained by dual deficits. EM stocks and currencies are a lot cheaper than they were in 2013. The current accounts are in better shape. Foreign funding is better. So there are, we think, good investments out there. I think investors could be looking at places like Taiwan or South Korea. There's a number of sort of sectors that are interesting in technology, for example. And then industrials, another area we've seen, let's say, year to date, places like marine freight, on the back of sort of shipping pricing. That's been a very strong trade, if investors were there. And then materials, could be of interest as well, sort of gold, metals, mining. And those are in places like South Africa, Russia. So definitely opportunities outside of China that are out there for investors.
Now, you mentioned market breadth, and certainly domestically, it's been okay, and within like the NASDAQ group, it's been less okay. Do you look at market breadth or how many stocks going up versus how many stocks going down, how much volume is going up versus how much volume is going down? Do you look at that globally? Is that a factor in how you make decisions based on the strength of markets, including kind of the relative underlying performance of the markets overall?
When the markets are very concentrated, as they had been, roughly since sort of 2017 and then very much in 2020, sort of exacerbated, right, by the kind of COVID fears and the fact that a lot of the winners in COVID tended to be those same big companies, both in the U.S. and ex-U.S. We look at that just because it is a big headwind for us when markets become so narrow. And so the positive has been, right, since sort of November, is that there has been, again, kind of more breadth, just in the sense that I said those sort of top 20 names, have taken something of a breather, or at least some differentiation between them. We don't necessarily, it's not that we're driving our investments based on sort of market breadth. It's just, we sort of know for ourselves that there's much less of a headwind for us, that our ability to outperform, our ability to find opportunities, our ability to sort of, create value, I suppose, right, is sort of driven by not having that tremendous sort of headwind against us in the large cap names, which, by the way, of course, are typically growth names. And so, having a value bias, it's kind of a double whammy.
Let me ask you a final question about what knocks your investment thesis, kind of just completely out. I mean, every bull market ends with a change in Fed policy. And over the last week or so, an adverse change, I should say, Fed becomes less friendly. We've heard several different Federal Reserve officials, some of whom are at the higher end of the importance scale, if you will, suggest that they are in favor of dialing back easy money policy or tapering or reducing bond buying as early as September or October, although they say it's not linked to any timetable for raising rates, which is typically a signal for the end of a bull market. How much right now is Fed policy affecting your decision making?
I think less, honestly, again, because the areas that we favor, that we think will perform well going forward, are something off the beaten path, in the sense that it's not the big growth names, which are very sensitive, to this. And it's also not sort of that deep value, right? I talked about our view that deep value trade is probably to some degree over, in part, because of the kind of Delta variant concerns, but also in part of, again, the concerns about policy becoming less friendly. And so it takes me back again to the kind of, what are the kind of names, right? The kind of high quality names that happen to be affordable. They've been overlooked. They were overlooked in the prior period because everybody was looking for growth. They've been overlooked more recently because everybody was looking for that sort of deep value kind of reflation story. You come back if the environment becomes more challenging in the long run, or sort of less supportive, I guess, from the top down. You come back to kind of, where are the good businesses, right? Where are the strong businesses that have good growth prospects, that are financially sound, that have some dividend yield to them, right? you know, where are those good businesses and what are they, kind of what levels are they trading at? Is there value to be had there? And so that's, I think, a sweet spot for us. And it's been, again, overlooked in recent years. And it feels to us like, given the kind of trend, you know, the kind of what you're describing in terms of the kind of policy direction, this could be a moment where investors start to kind of notice the appeal of those kinds of businesses again.
All right, Marina, we thank you for your time. Appreciate your insights. Hope to catch up with you relatively soon again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marina Severinovsky is Investment Director of U.S. QEP and Product Manager as well, joining us in today's U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you in a couple weeks.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.